and welcome to the debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, under UK and international law, visiting heads of foreign governments, such as Prime Minister Netanyahu, have immunity from legal process and cannot be arrested or detained. This is according to the British government regarding a petition of more than 100,000 people to the UK Parliament's website demanding that Netanyahu be arrested for the murder of more than 2,000 people during the war in Gaza last year. So why would Israeli Premier Netanyahu be protected by British law after committing murder when London prides itself for saying that it stands for justice?
An online petition posted on the UK Parliament's website calls for the arrest of Israel's Prime Minister upon his arrival in London on Wednesday. Activists, including the initiator of the petition, Damien Moran, say under the international law, Netanyahu must be detained for war crimes against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip during last summer's offensive.
According to the international law and the British law itself, This, obviously, the leader of the Israeli government, who is Netanyahu, visiting us next week, he is actually, according to the Geneva Convention, committed crimes against the international law. And the British government should actually have him accountable for that crime.
The British government has already issued a response to the petition. It ruled out the possibility of arresting Netanyahu, saying visiting heads of foreign governments enjoy immunity from prosecution. Also, Israel has dismissed the petition as meaningless. Experts believe that a petition will lead to further isolation of Israel.
More and more people, and not only in Britain, it's even happening in America, as I'm sure you know, they are becoming aware that Netanyahu is a disaster, not only for the Palestinians, but for America, but also for Jews, for the Jews of the world. You see, what is happening as a result of Netanyahu's policies is that we are witnessing a rising global tide of anti-Israelism.
Israel has launched three devastating wars on the Gaza Strip since late 2008. The latest war in early July 2014 left over 2,140 Palestinians, including nearly 580 children, dead. More than 11,000 others, including some 3,400 children, 2,000 women, and over 400 elderly people were also injured. The offensive also left about 500,000 people displaced or homeless. Israel's wars on Gaza and its years-long siege of the territory have given rise to increased calls for the trial of Israeli leaders for war crimes at the International Criminal Court.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London, Jeffrey Alderman, Professor of History and Politics, University of Buckingham, and Hafsa Kara Mustafa, journalist and political analyst also out of London. Thanking you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Mr. Alderman. Professor, according to the UK's own rules, 100,000 signed petitions can bring the subject to be debated in Parliament. How can the Parliament actually ignore this demand, or is it that simply the subject is discussed but with no responsibility to really act upon it?
Well, since the petition has gained 100,000 signatures, there will have to be a debate. This will probably be a Westminster Hall debate rather than a debate in the House of Commons itself. And various points of view will be put, and the government will respond to the debate. In a sense, the government has preempted this by saying that under no circumstances will it permit Mr. Netanyahu to be arrested. And it goes on to point out that in principle, the Conservative government supported Israel's right to intervene in Gaza after rocket attacks from Gaza on Israel. So we'll have a debate, but it will not come to any definitive conclusion other than the airing of the subject.
Well, the definitive conclusion would appear that actually nothing is going to happen to Netanyahu
when he enters
the UK. Okay, well, Ms. Kara Mustafa, looking at this, is the answer then to take Israel to the International Criminal Court instead, although some would ask, how can this be done when we have witnessed that even at the ICC, when it comes to Israel, it appears to be hesitant and somewhat biased, as we saw when the court refused to charge Tel Aviv with war crimes based on the 2010 attack and murder of activists from that aid ship?
Well, that would be an understatement to actually state that the ICC is too scared to intervene. If you'll remember the NATO onslaught on Libya, Mr. Ocampo, who at the time was the main prosecutor of the ICC, issued an arrest warrant on Muammar Gaddafi within a week of uprising starting. Although based on mixed reports coming out of Libya stating that a massacre had taken place, and of course we now know that no massacre actually took place, but the arrest warrant was nevertheless issued. Now when you look at the onslaught on Gaza in the summer of 2014, you will see that numerous violations of international law were committed, including the destruction of hospitals, of UN shelter, of schools, and of course we'll all recall the killing of the Bakr brother on a beach in broad daylight by soldiers, and yet still that did not prompt the ICC to act or react. So I think the ICC has already proved that it was a very scared institution, that it will not touch Israel under any circumstance. But of course, when we're discussing this petition in the UK, we also have to recognize that nothing will come of it in substance. But I think it's a major step forward for the Palestinian cause to show that public opinion has greatly shifted in favor of the Palestinian narrative.
Well, let's talk about that shift that you just talked about, Ms. Kara Mustafa. This question to Mr. Alderman. It appears that there is a schism between public perspective and official government line regarding this situation with Israel. How do you see it?
I'm not sure that there's a split, but I might agree with you if you would say there's a mismatch, a misalignment. The British government the present British government, a Conservative government, is close to Israel for two reasons. Firstly, trade between Israel and the United Kingdom has never been higher. But secondly, and much more importantly, there is an unprecedentedly high and deep level of cooperation on the security front. I don't think it's without significance that last week the government announced the bestowal of new peerages on people, going into the House of Lords, the so-called upper chamber of the British Parliament. And one of those peerages is to the director of the Conservative Friends of Israel. So you can see how close the relationship is between Israel and the present Conservative government.
Okay, stay with me, both my guests, Mr. Alderman and Ms. Kara Mustafa. We're going to cross over to our Facebook wall and see what our viewers have actually mentioned about this subject.
Netanyahu must be arrested and hanged. The world would be a better, safer, and more peaceful place without terrorists, Netanyahu and his Zionist sympathizers. Will the arrest of Netanyahu liberate the Palestinians, or will it bring back the lives of the dead people of Palestine? Even if he is arrested and found guilty of war crimes, that would still not provide solutions to the problems Palestinians are facing. What Palestinians need is a lasting solution to their problems, not the arrest of Netanyahu. Kill Netanyahu, the big terrorist on the earth, and bloodthirsty. Start with Blair and Bush for their crimes against humanity and not fighting against terrorism. I think Netanyahu is already dead, emotionally as well as morally. It is then a simple request by the people for the UK government to arrest this bloodsucker. Let just citizens attack him in his hotel in London. That criminal must pay for his crimes. This petition won't do anything. The men within the British government are on Bibi's side. Nothing will change with the petition. The father won't arrest the child, just some verbal slaps on wrist. I wonder why the International Criminal Court fails to bring this Israeli leader to justice.
What about some of these comments that Ms. Karen Mustafa, one of them basically saying they didn't arrest Blair and Bush, and that the men in power in the UK are on Bibi's side, so actually nothing is going to happen. Your take.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think even the gentleman who actually initiated the petition recognized that the arrest wasn't going to happen. I think we know full well. But again, this is very much part of the campaigning for Palestinian rights, whereby this is making sure that the plight of Palestinians is aired. And I think managing to get a debate is absolutely a fantastic thing, because it means that the issue is going to be put on the table. Now, for many years in the UK, the narrative has been dominated by mainstream media organizations that have only almost presented the Israeli side, and to such a point that, in fact, public opinion, British public opinion, up until 2011, actually thought that the Palestinians were occupying Israel and not the other way around. Now, of course, with the emergence of internet, of social media, more and more people have become aware of the situation of in Palestine and of Palestinians and the plight of Palestinians. And I think this shift in opinion, which just translated in the number of people who've signed the petition, actually shows and translates that shift in public opinion and the desire for British people to actually see justice served for the Palestinians. So, of course, we're not going to see Netanyahu arrested, and sadly, we're not yet going to see Bush or Tony Blair arrested for their crimes either, because, of course, international law, according to international Western capitals, only applies to African and Arab leaders, and certainly not to Western leaders or Western-friendly leaders. But, of course, this is a step in the right direction, and I think on that particular point, it's very commendable.
Well, Mr. Alderman, the British government has said that during Operation Protective Edge in 2014, that Israel had a right to defend itself within the limits of humanitarian law. Do you think that what we saw during 2014, the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, was indicative of defensive action being taken by Israel?
I think it was. Anyone who's been to southern Israel and has talked to the people in Ashkelon or Ashdod or Sderot, will know that people die as a result of indiscriminate rocket attacks from Gaza, that there is children suffer every day from trauma. No civilized country is going to allow rockets to be fired into its territory with impunity, and the present Conservative government certainly supports Israel's right to defend itself in 2014. Incidentally, there's an interesting point about the International Criminal Court. If the International Criminal Court were so minded as to issue an arrest warrant for Bibi Netanyahu, which is extremely unlikely, but if it were so minded, it would also have to issue an arrest warrant for the Hamas leaders in Gaza, because we have to recognize that every rocket launched from Gaza was itself a war crime, wasn't it?
Okay, Ms. Karen Mustafa, I'll let you answer that. What do you think about overall that actually the British government is saying that Israel was within its right as far as defending its country?
Well, I'm surprised to hear Mr. Alderman actually refer to civilization and a civilized country, bearing in mind that Israel has actually kept the Gaza Strip under siege. You know, this is an expression that we thought was left for history books in medieval times, and yet in 2014, 2015, and indeed since 2007, the Gaza Strip has been under siege. That means that very few people can actually access the Gaza Strip. Only the Israeli decide what goes into the Gaza Strip, and to just to give you a slight idea of what it means, how it translates for the Palestinians. Palestinian children can't actually have chocolate because the Israelis have decided that 1,000 calories per head is sufficient for Palestinians, and therefore any extra treat is considered beyond what the Palestinians are allowed to actually have. So to assume that there is a level of civilization in this conflict is, I think, very disingenuous when you realize that, of course, Israel not only has an incredibly well-equipped and sophisticated army with very sophisticated weaponry, but of course it has the protective dome, which actually stops Hamas fire rockets doing any damage whatsoever to Israeli citizens. So the idea of putting the two on a par is incredibly unfair, given that 2,500 Palestinians have died, and on the Israeli side, I think it's been a handful of civilians, and most actually died from friendly fire.
What about what Mr. Alderman said, Ms. Kara Mostafa? He talked about the Israeli kids suffering from trauma.
Well, 500 Palestinian children have died. Scores of Palestinian children don't have access to water, can't go back to their schools because those schools have been destroyed. Scores of Palestinian children have seen their mothers and their fathers actually blown to shreds. I think to compare the fact that some Israeli children have heard some loud noises in their back garden to the actual suffering and the plight of Palestinians is very, very an unbalanced view of what the conflict is about. And I think very much reflects how the mainstream media portrays this conflict as if this was two equal sides. Of course it's not two equal sides. There is an aggressor and an occupying force, which is Israel, and there is the victim of illegal occupation, which are the Palestinians.
Your take, Mr. Alderman, when does an entity have the right to actually defend itself? When we're talking about the words that Ms. Kara Mostafa said, she talked about the occupying force, talking about Israel and what it is doing, especially in the Gaza Strip and in Palestine in general, when does an entity have the right to defend itself? We look at that over 2,000 people were killed, and on the Palestinian side, less than 10, I believe, were killed on the Israeli side. Obviously, not very equal. So, do the Palestinians have a right to try to defend themselves?
Well, I'm very sorry that you find it uncongenial that so few Israelis have been killed by Palestinian rockets. Of course, the Palestinian the Hamas government has a right to defend itself. But we must remember that if we read the Hamas Charter, we know what Hamas's end game is, and that is the destruction of Israel. And no Israeli government is going to allow a situation to exist where rockets can be fired into its territory, but it can't take action against those rockets. Some years ago, I offered to my good offices to ensure safe passage for a delegation from the Hamas government in Gaza to Jerusalem to negotiate and sign a definitive peace treaty. And I'm delighted to repeat that offer now, to see that a Hamas delegation goes safely to Jerusalem to sign a definitive peace treaty. I can't be fairer than that.
Mr. Alderman, looking at what you're saying, and I want to also expand the number that we have of Israelis who were killed, because I definitely want to be fair, was 75 in that operation by Israel last year. You said about a peace treaty. We know that Hamas was actually the elected government by the Palestinians in Gaza Strip, which Israel never really accepted. And we see, again, I want to talk about as far as the equity here or the lack thereof. When you look at 75 people being killed compared to over 2,000 people being killed, with the majority of them being children in one of the most densely populated areas in the world, do you not think that there should be, if you want to say, a day of reckoning or having to answer for that, at least in some court of law somewhere?
The British government in 1945 did not have to answer in any court of law, because in March of that year, a botched RAF operation against Gestapo headquarters in Copenhagen caused the deaths of over 80 children. There has to be a sense of realism here.
And so it's not realistic, Mr. Alderman, so it's not realistic that someone should actually go to court for killing over 2,000 people? That's not realistic, sir?
You don't think it's realistic that the Hamas government should be taken to court?
I'm asking you a question. I didn't say yes or no about Hamas. I'm asking you a question about 2,000 people being killed. Do you think it is realistic or not, in the world of 2015, the world we live today, that some entity somewhere should actually have a court that at least it is heard in a court of law whether Tel Aviv is guilty or not of war crimes, sir, for killing 2,000 people, with the majority of them being civilians?
You, by Tel Aviv, you mean Jerusalem, don't you?
I mean
you?
Tel Aviv, sir. I believe that that is the accepted international capital of those who accept it. Answer my question, sir, please.
No, it's not.
Answer the question.
I refuse to answer a question in which you misdescribe the capital of Israel. The capital of Israel is Jerusalem, isn't
it? By whose definition, sir? By international standards? I don't think so. Ms. Kara Mustafa, if we look at it, Ms. Mustafa, if we look at the situation, and do you not think that when we look at the Western governments and their involvement in this, how much of a responsibility lies on London, lies on Washington, lies on Paris for what we see, these war crimes that takes place by the Israelis?
Well, for one thing, Marzia, I need to just make a slight correction. When you say 75 Israelis died, out of those 75, 68 were Israeli soldiers. They were not actually civilians.
Right.
Whereas the 2,500 Palestinian victims, the overwhelming majority was actually civilian population. So there is a big difference in that figure. Coming back to, it's interesting that Mr. Alderman also mentions the 1940s. I think we could compare the reaction of the Palestinians to the Jews in the Warsaw ghetto who were trying to escape the injustice of the Nazi regime and actually targeted Nazis with any means that they had at their disposal. And I think at the time everyone respected that coming from Europe's oppressed Jewish community. And I can see that when we look at the suffering of the Palestinians, we see a strong parallel. Unfortunately, of course, many of those who fled the Nazi atrocities went on to Palestine to commit atrocities against the Palestinians themselves. Now, going back to the responsibility of Western capitals, of course they're responsible. They support, they fund, they unconditionally help Israel, and we've seen it obviously with David Cameron's government, and the majority of his cabinet are actually conservative friends of Israel. So their responsibility is very much a large one, and I think with no pressure from all these capitals, we're not going to see much difference in Israel. But
and
I think the time
I'm
of reckoning
so sorry,
is happening
but I
soon.
Have to thank both of you. We've come to the end of the time for this program. Mr. Jeffrey Alderman, Professor of History and Politics, University of Buckingham, and Ms. Hafsa Kara Mustafa, journalist and political analyst also out of London. Appreciate both of you being with us. And as always, viewers, thanks so much for staying tuned to another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out from Tehran.